Liam, welcome, welcome. Great to have you on. Really excited to have a chat with you because, as a lead security researcher at Sparebit, I'm sure you have a lot of alpha you can share with the community. And also for myself as well, having recently joined Sigma Prime, I want to ask you some questions, like get your take on it. What was your experience working there, your biggest takeaways, and so forth? So, yeah, thanks for coming on, man.
For sure, glad to be here. I feel like it's been hoping to do one of these.
First of all, I am pretty keen to learn more about your background. Is it fair to say that you got into programming and security when you were really young?
Honestly, I wouldn't say so. So I got interested a little bit in crypto in high school, just in my senior year. I think that was like the 2017 kind of ICO boom. And then I actually went to university. I was doing engineering at the start, like mechatronics engineering. And then after about a year, I switched over to computer science, and decided that was kind of like more in line with what I wanted to do. But I wouldn't say like I'd been doing this for a long, long time. So it's still relatively new to me.
So you went to uni and you switch your major into a computer science. Do you still recommend people to go to uni these days? Because I graduated uni quite a long time ago, and now I think it's a lot different. Like the fees are like insanely high, and people are saying like unis are not really teaching them what they need for work.
I guess it depends what country you're in. Like I guess in the US it's quite expensive to go to college. And so sometimes it's not really worth it. The skills that you learn aren't really super valuable to crypto. Like you can't really learn the same kind of skill set that you would need. But I think the foundations are always useful. And so if that's something like you want to broaden your foundations a little bit, it probably makes sense, to give you an idea of like where you want to go. But I guess if you already know what you want to do, like it doesn't really seem like there's any point. But if I was to do it again, I would honestly probably just do like major in maths. I think that really, like, if you have a solid math background, you can kind of go into whatever you want to do. Like, you can learn to program, ultimately. Like, you don't need to go to university for that. But yeah, I think maths is definitely like maths and physics is probably like a really good foundation to have. To do whatever you want to do.
That's interesting. I would have thought you would recommend people to computer science. But yeah, math is a pretty interesting one, especially with the ZK stuff coming out. That's pretty math heavy. It's definitely an
For sure.
advantage when it comes to auditing. And I saw a couple of like the reports on Code Arena, and some of them were pretty math heavy as well. And yeah, definitely like if you have a math background, you would have like an area that you're really strong and that other pe not many other people would be able to do.
Yeah, like a lot of the DeFi is pretty math intensive, so I think like being able to understand what they're implementing goes a long way.
Yeah, right. And after uni, oh, actually during university, yeah, you got into an internship with Sigma Prime. And I also saw that you did a Paradigms Fellowship as well. Was that around the same time?
No, so I joined Super Prime at the start of 2020. Was working part time with them for about a bit over a year before I joined full time. And I was finishing my studies at that point. I think I finished my studies in May 2021, and then kind of like moved to full time auditing. Yeah, because we were in lockdown at the time. You probably re remember just as much as I did. I
Yeah,
don't know.
yeah.
Perth was kind of like, you guys kind of had it easy compared to us. But I had all this free time outside of work, and I'm like, oh, what else do I do? May as well do something to just get better at my job. So yeah, I just started doing a bunch of Code Arena.
Yeah, nice. So the Code Arena stuff, I actually want to ask you this because I, at the moment, when I'm doing auditing, like at Sigma Prime, I have trouble sort of focusing on another code base, if you know what I mean. So like having two code bases
For
in my
sure.
head at the same time, like I can't really like do that at the moment. Not sure if that's something that you sort of dealt with as well, and how did you sort of overcome that?
Yeah, I definitely did. I think I just treated them differently. For me, like Coderunner at the time was more of a game, and it was just like, how fast can I find these issues? I didn't really care about understanding so much. It was just more about like how quickly can I break this apart? Whereas in Sigma Prime, I felt like I had more time to really dive into things and understand and like come up with like more interesting approaches. But I think like both were beneficial. They kind of like helped each other along the way. So it kind of worked out.
Right. I get what you mean. Like last year when I was doing Codarena, I was doing that like really fast speed run type of style as well. But now it's become like much harder to sort of find high issues that in that way because there's much more competition. If you want to come up with a unique finding, then obviously you have to
100%.
spend more time and dig into it a bit more. How much time were you spending on each contest? Back in when you were on Codarena a lot, was that 2021?
For the first couple of months, I was probably spending 5 to 15 hours a week. And I probably never really went over that amount of time. Because I stopped doing Coderina when I left Sigma Prime as well, or around the same time. So, yeah, I guess I didn't really like at any point do any full-time Coderina, which would have been interesting to do, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Haven't bothered to come back to it yet.
Wow. 5 to 15 hours, that's really not much time at all. Was that because there weren't many people doing Codarena at the time? And with 5 to 15, you can probably like find most of the issues.
I think a bit of both. I think, yeah, there's less competition, but I think for me, I was just like kind of optimized what I was looking for. I did at one point just stopped looking for lows and QAs. I just looked at highs and mediums. So I kind of like saved a lot of time from writing up my own issues, because I was just looking to maximize the value that I was providing. And so that kind of worked well for me. But yeah, there was definitely some weeks where I spent a lot more time, I would say. Like if there was multiple contests on. But yeah, I wasn't like super like intent on covering the entire code base. I was just wanted to find what I look into what I was interested in really. So it was like a learning process as well for me.
Right. So is it fair to say you were sort of approaching it almost like a Munify style where you just look at the parts where that had a high probability of having a high severity issue and you just dig into that but not really bother like understanding the
For sure.
project fully and that type of stuff?
But then, like, the funny thing was, it's like I didn't intend to understand the project, but then at the end, I'm like, oh, I kind of understand what's going on. But then at that point, you just move on to the next project, and then you kind of like, as an auditor, you just dump all the information that you remembered from the previous project because it's not really useful anymore. I think that's the kind of like the challenging part of being an auditor is like, yeah, you understand projects, but you don't necessarily like keep a backlog of everything that you've worked on. And like, yeah, it's a different type of understanding. It's like an understanding just to break, not really understanding to like understand properly.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting because I can't really understand a project that quickly. Does that come easier over time, you would say?
Yeah, you realize like a lot of DeFi is very much the same. They've either forked code from different projects and then put things together, or you just see the same types of mechanics again and again. So it does become like a bit of like pattern matching. I think that's really what it comes down to. I think that's the skill of an auditor. It's like pattern matching, like, and that's a skill that's not necessarily like crazy, like difficult, like ZK auditing or anything like that. It's more like it's a skill that takes time to develop, and like a lot of repetition, and it's like a muscle you need to keep training it again and again to sort of keep up. And I guess that's kind of like why it's not easy to be a good auditor and why there aren't many of us. It's just because it's kind of a persistent game. And it's not really like something that interests a lot of people, I would say.
Yeah, you mentioned like every time you move to a different project, you dump the knowledge, but surely that would be sort of retained in the back of your mind, and then every time you look at a new project, you would sort of almost have that intuition slowly building up as you look at more and more projects.
I think you remember the types of bugs and patterns that you kind of saw before, but and then it kind of comes back to you. But yeah, I guess if you looked at the code base again, it would come back to you. But yeah, it's a different kind of understanding. It's like you don't necessarily understand how the project like intends to operate anymore. You just understand like the types of bugs it had and then kind of where you found them, which is probably the more important thing to remember.
I hope that slowly becomes more easy over time for me. I've definitely felt that just working at Sigma Prime, coming up on 2 months now, just having the opportunity to dig a bit more deeper into the code, that has actually helped me a lot in terms of just improving compared to only just doing like the speed run type of auditing. Right, you need that sort of deeper approach to sort of level up, I think. And like, I guess a lot of people are wanting some tips on how to go from like the intermediate level to like the advanced level. Do you have any tips around that?
Yeah, it's a challenging one because like I feel like it's really easy to plateau in this space where like there's lots of resources to get to an intermediate level, and like the path is pretty clear, and then when you want to get to the top, it's kind of like unknown. And so I guess like honestly, like it really kind of comes down to repetition. And really just like thinking about the same or similar problems again and again, and just being really like consistent at finding them. And having like that deep understanding in the back of your mind. And like I said, like I think this the skill is being able to pick up a code base and kind of like recognize different parts of the code base as something that's similar to what you've worked on previously, and use that to piece the puzzle together. And again, I think this just kind of comes with time. There's nothing that's gonna like speed it up per se. Some people might be better at getting to that level than others, but I think mostly comes down to time, and just yeah, repetition. I think maybe finding like a mentor or like with Spearbit, where you get to work with people who like I guess have a deeper level of knowledge than you is kind of like super beneficial too. And I think that's what like traditional audit companies like Sigma Prime are really good at, where you get to pair with talented people, and then you get to like kind of sponge off them and really understand like how they think as well. And so yeah, I think that's like that was one of the reasons why Code Arena was valuable, because you get to see how other people think. And so trying to work with as many people as you can is probably the best way to like get different insights and different approaches on the same code base. I think that's probably the most valuable thing you can do.
Nice. Just one problem I had at Code Arena was just finding other people to work with. I guess most
Yeah.
of last year I was pretty much just auditing solo.
I think the incentives are like don't really like reward. I mean, yeah, it is better to participate as a group, but people like I guess don't trust each other, that everyone like they don't trust that each other is going to do the same level of work and also perform the same quality of work. So I guess like yeah, I think the same thing happens in Immunify. Like you rarely see groups find bugs in Immunify and split it, because people prefer to work on their own, or like they'd rather claim a reward on their own. But I think Trust 90, I think he's actually doing like has like mentors that he helps to find bugs in Immunify, and I think that's kind of a good approach. But I'm not too sure like how they split the money, or if that's something they even consider.
And I'm curious on how you would sort of rate your own skill level when you first started Code Arena. Say, let's say, comparing it with the spare bit roles, right? So you've got juniors, we got associates, security researchers, and leads. So how would you rate yourself on that scale when you first started Code Arena?
I'd say I was definitely probably around the associate security researcher. Yeah, I think Code Arena definitely accelerated a bunch of my learning just because I was doing like three audits a week or two audits a week. And so it was just like did that for maybe 3 or 4 months. And I grinded pretty hard doing that as well. So I guess like yeah, it kind of like you spend three or like that 3 or so months probably was worth like a year or a year and a half of just like what I would normally like how much I would normally progress. And so I guess that made a huge difference for me. Yeah, I don't know, it's tricky. I'm not too sure, like it's hard to remember like how good I was back then or how bad I was.
Yeah, well, I seem to have the impression that you pretty much just hit the ground running on Code Arena and just started finding massive bugs. So would you r say that you learned more on Code Arena than you actually did working at an auditing firm, or how would you sort of rate the learning opportunities? Because people are trying to decide whether they should grind hard at audit contests like solo compared to like joining a firm and that kind of thing.
I think both are super valuable. I think there are a lot of skills and yeah, a ton of skills that you learn at an audit company that you won't get on your own, like that you won't be able to develop. That's like one part of it's like, you know, professional skills, like being able to deal with clients and like actually like ask the right questions. But also just like having like a deep understanding of how things work, and like going through that process without any like stress of like that's looming over your head. And again, like being able to have someone to guide you as well. I think it's probably easy to get lost in Code Arena when it's just you working on a project. And I'm gonna take a guess, like I like if I was new coming into it and I was doing Code Arena, like my approach would probably be like many others where you'd go through a code base and then you would on one side of the screen you'd have like all the reports and you'd basically go through and like kind of categorize things and look for like the same patterns. And I think that kind of understanding is good and bad, like it, but it's not really teaching you to understand like and build like a mental model of the contracts in your head. It's just teaching you to like basically like, oh, this line has this. Let's replace like it should have this line instead. And it's not really like the type of understanding that you should have. And so I think audit companies like really provide you with that, like the time and resources to get that level of understanding. So again, I think both are valuable in their own way.
Yeah, I can definitely relate. You pretty much described exactly what I was doing last year when I first started on Code Arena, just pattern matching the vulnerabilities and just try to find as much as I can in a contest. And yeah, 100%, you're right in that. Like once I joined an auditing firm, like the luxury of time is just insane. Like the engagements are so long, you've got so much time to read documentation, try to understand it at a deeper level. Yeah, that, and also just with the combined with the pressure being taken off you in a sense, because you've got colleagues that you can ask questions and they can find the findings that you missed, that kind of stuff. And it's kind of counterintuitive, but I feel like if you slow down and try to understand things a bit more, then you can actually, yeah, find more issues rather than trying to like speed run the thing.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think especially when you're when it's like I remember when I first started, everything was so overwhelming, and I think you need to have like a bit of confidence before you can kind of like start to go into things like Code Arena. And like again, audit companies give you the flexibility and time to really like understand things at a granular level rather than just like again, like copy paste kind of like style. where you just look for patterns and apply the same like and you can kind of see that in Code Arena where there's certain types of issues that everyone finds, so they're not really valuable anymore. And I think the like it I mean this is how they work, right? It's like the unique issues get rewarded the most, and the unique ones always seem to be people who've like really thought about a unique problem, like a unique like attack vector, and it's something that you probably won't ever see in another project because it's very unique to that project and how that project works. And so that's something that you wouldn't really normally get by just reading reports.
Yeah, I noticed that too. Like, most of the unique, really cool findings are business logic issues that you can't really pattern
100%.
match. Yeah, you really have to just be super thorough and just like trace everything, trace all the function flows, and just think about all the sort of things that can go wrong and be quite creative to try to find those type of issues.
Yeah, and it's kind of good that it's come to that, I think. It means that the top like the work of the top researchers isn't necessarily replicable, but so they still get rewarded the way they should, but it doesn't mean that you can't get to a point where you can find those same issues. It just, again, it requires like a deeper level of knowledge, and that's something that people can work towards. And so like Y Academy, Spearbit, traditional audit firms and stuff, a pretty good route for getting to that point, when you have maybe plateaued. And so like, and that's something I've seen from others who are in the space. Like they hit a certain level and then they join an audit firm and they seem to just get a lot better. So
Yeah, I definitely felt that plateau last year a couple of times, and yeah, hopefully I'm on the path to getting a lot better.
oh, for sure. I mean, Cyber Prime is the place to be for that, so it shows
Yeah,
well.
nice. So, how did you actually get the internship at Sigma Prime straight out of uni? I think a lot of people would be, super happy if they got that type of opportunity.
I mean, it was an interesting time. It was like before DeFi summer, so I guess the security field was, I mean, there was still high in demand, but it wasn't that big. And there wasn't really anyone who was interested in doing it at that time. But yeah, funnily enough, I met my boss, Mehdi, at a party, and a mutual of ours like introduced each other because I had an interest in crypto. I guess we just started chatting for quite a while. And then we met up again in the new year at the start of 2020. And then I guess like because I had somewhat of a computer science background at that time, I guess like kind of made sense for me to do a few days a week, and I really loved it there. Like it was a lot of fun, so much to learn. Like the team was amazing. Like it was just like got thrown into the midst of it all, but it was like so much fun to have that. So yeah, I was kind of like didn't really have any prior knowledge. I was just learning on the job, and then just trying to do as much as I can, from the start. So yeah,
Wow.
it was a bit of luck, I guess, and just like being interested in like doing the work. Like that's I think that's like something that people forget. You don't necessarily need the skills to get a job. You just need the curiosity and like interest to actually perform. And yeah, you can get far with just that.
Nice. So the lesson is go to social events and network.
Network, yeah, I guess like networking really does work in some ways. No, it's best when it's unintentional. That's the best kind of networking.
Yeah, that's a really cool story. So you did 1 year part-time and then 1 year full-time after you graduated. And then after the Code Arena stuff, you left Sigma Prime.
I think I took a little bit of a break, a few weeks off, after Sigma Prime, and then I think I had my first, oh, I had a private audit first, and then I had a spare bit, and then I was doing some spare bit stuff from there on. But yeah, so I think it was kind of good because I guess spare bit I could structure it a bit better around my travels. And like, I kind of know when I can take a break and on, I would, like, if I feel like I need to take a break, I can. And that kind of works with my lifestyle. But yeah, the Paradigm Fellowship was kind of last minute because at that time, so like I'd been traveling in Europe for a few months. And like this was after DevConnect last year. And I was like, oh, I gotta go home because my visa's running out. And like I was like still waiting to hear back from the Paradigm Fellowship. And then they literally confirmed it like a week before I needed to go home. And the flight was like booked the day before, and I was like stressing out because I'm like, damn, I'm like, how am I gonna get out of this? Like, where am I gonna go? So like, it was kind of like worked out in the end, but it was a bit stressful.
How long did you do the fellowship for?
I think it was just a week, yeah. But it was pretty intense. Like, I mean, we had some workshops, and it was just like a lot of networking with everyone there, and like just meeting other young, talented people and gaining insights from them. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And then, yeah, made some friends from that as well. So it was good.
Nice. So pretty much 1 year full time at Sigma Prime and 1 year of Codarena, you went from like associate level security researcher to lead. Is that right? Is that pretty much how far you progressed in that single year?
Yeah, I guess so.
That's pretty insane progress. I mean, the jump from associate to security researcher, I feel, is pretty big already. The security researcher to lead, obviously another big jump. So yeah, pretty massive progress that you made in just 1 year's time.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely feels like I'm like, you get that bit of imposter syndrome sometimes because you're like, you're around other big names, you're like, damn, so like, do I belong to be up here with them all? So you definitely do question it sometimes, but I think yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's been really fun to work with these like with C. Michelle and Gerard and like all the other LSRs at Spearbit. Been learning a lot from how they deal with things too. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think imposter syndrome is something that a lot of us deal with. And yeah, it's interesting
Yeah.
to hear that you sort of have that as well.
I think it's natural to have a bit of imposter syndrome. Like, it would be kind of bad if you thought you knew everything and you were the best at everything. Imposter syndrome, I guess, kind of brings your ego down a little bit and puts you in check. Like, you know, maybe you aren't the best, but yeah, I think it's just like knowing where to draw the line with that as well, and like not putting yourself down that much. But yeah, it's like you can know you're not the best, but you should also recognize that you're somewhat like you're pretty good at what you do. And so it's like finding that balance. But yeah, it seems pretty common in this type of work.
Yeah, definitely. But I do sort of notice that people who always say that they are not the best and that type of stuff, they're either like really good or they are pretty much gonna get really good in like a short period of time. So yeah, that's what I've sort of noticed.
Do you think it's like a driver for them to perform better? It's like they never feel like they're doing enough, so they just do too much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, everyone in the field respects you a lot, how far you've come within this short period of time. I'm not sure if you saw the Twitter thread that I posted. Everyone's just like, I love least word on it.
Yeah. Oh no, that's it, man. There's a few gems in this field, so like I love to, it's nice to kind of be friendly with them.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I've met so many people on Codarena, just DMing people, and also on Securium as well. I feel Everyone in this industry is super open to share advice for newbies, and yeah, it's really cool to have met so many people.
Yeah, it's nice that it doesn't feel like anyone needs to gatekeep any information, because I think a lot of the security alpha is somewhat public. So it's not like MEV where, you can't tell people your strategy because someone would just copy it and just basically front run you. It just seems like people, like, there is so much work as well, so there's no competition in that side, and so people kind of like don't feel like they're losing anything by telling you, like, by giving you good advice. And I really like that mindset. It's like people are just kind of here to help each other out. And so yeah, it's really nice to see that. It's like we were all beginners at one point, so it's like important to pay it forward a little bit.
Have you got any advice for newbies coming on to Code Arena, like how they should approach learning and maybe trying to find someone to team up with or anything like that?
I would say, like, what's underrated, I mean, definitely start with like Ethernaut challenges, which can be pretty fun to do. And they're not like, they give you a bit of a taste of security without having to understand like deep level like EVM stuff. But I think, and then like understanding like Solidity a lot better. But I think like what helps a lot too is just understanding like EVM architecture, and like Huff can be a pretty good tool for that, just to kind of like basically like have that foundation of knowing exactly what you're working with before you even think about security. So like, because people see the money and they just want to rush into doing security and basically try and find as many stuff as they can, and so it definitely seems like there's a bit of a gold rush. But I think like if you take the time to really understand and like plan out where you want to go in this space, you might have a better, like, you might be better long term from that.
Right. So I actually saw you post some stuff about like ZK and Cairo and that type of stuff. Would you say that long term those have a lot of potential and maybe you'll be specializing in one of those things?
Yeah, I mean, I think my personal belief is that I think that those things will definitely be like, there'll be demand for them, but it won't be like anything close to how much demand there is on Solidity. It's just they will struggle to find the right people, and that's already like a bit of a problem. It's like no one can really audit ZK stuff, and so people, like, I've spoken to people and they're looking for anyone who can work on that stuff, and it's just like impossible to find. And so I guess, like, I think like it's still important to carve out your niche, but you should also stick to that when you do find your niche. And so if EVM is your niche and you want to stick to that, like, don't doesn't really make sense to like move around different blockchain stacks, unless the type of work is somewhat similar. But I think Cairo for now is like not really at a stage where you'll get a lot of work, but that's because they're doing like the regenesis where they're wiping the state, and yeah, all these projects will get relaunched and a bunch of TVL will come on, and then at that point I think there'll be a lot of demand. So like, it Cairo for me is something that if you were to start now or like start just doing a bit on the side, you'd be in a pretty good position. And I would say, like, I mean, they are just smart contracts at the end of the day, and it does feel like there can be some similarities with EVM security. The same with Solana, and like, I mean, there's obviously unique bugs that are different and you'd have to learn, but there is a lot of overlap between like Cairo, Solana, Solidity, Cosmwasm. And so yeah, that kind of makes it easier to move across blockchains if that's something you'd want to do. But it's definitely like, it's not like you should try and do Cairo and EVM. You should definitely like be like, oh, I want to spend 3 to 6 months doing chiro. Let's just see how we go with that. And if it's something that works out for you, then you can stick to that, and then you've got your niche. And then you'll be, potentially at the top of your field when it comes to smart contract security, when it in terms of chiro. So that's something that's, yeah, people probably should think about before they try and learn too much.
Yeah, interesting. I'm sort of learning a bit about the ZK math a bit on the side for now, just like a couple of hours a week. Nothing too crazy, but I think my main focus is still EVM at this point. I want to like get good at one thing, but in case some
For
of those
sure.
other things sort of pop off, I do want to have a bit of background knowledge there, right? Just in case.
For sure. Yeah, I think ZK seems to be kind of like up and coming. A bunch of projects are launching this year, so I just don't know, like, yeah, it's hard to know how much demand there would be for like applications, though. That's kind of like where the demand would be from. It's like you've got Scroll, which their smart contracts are still in Solidity, so they're still like a ZK EVM like compatible. So like you wouldn't necessarily need to learn an entire new stack to get behind that. But then you've got like, yeah, there's other pieces, like pieces of ZK tech, which then use like Circom and Plonk, and so that kind of requires a different type of knowledge. So yeah, I guess it's like kind of hard to pick a winner at this point in time, and so maybe it's not worth trying to pick a winner and just waiting it out to like see what really happens.
Yeah, that's an interesting point you bring up. Like, most of the money is in the application layer. So when it comes to auditing, yeah, that's probably where the money's going to be moving forward.
Yeah, for sure.
And just going back to Codarena a bit, you were also a judge on Codarena. How did you find the judging process there? Was there anything that you can recommend? Wardens, just from the judging side, like whether certain reports you really value or certain things that wardens do that annoy you or anything like that.
So I don't know if it's changed much since I last judged, but I'm guessing it probably hasn't. I think the one main difference is that highs and mediums require like a proof of concept, right? Or like something along those lines, or like a basically like a detail. It doesn't have to be like a test script. It has to, just has to be like a how would you exploit this kind of idea, right? So I guess like I really appreciate when wardens like actually put in the time to like you can tell when someone doesn't understand the issue at hand. Like you can find something and be like, this is exploitable, or like this doesn't have re-entrancy protections, therefore it's you can do re-entrancy. But if they haven't explained like how you would perform that attack, to me it isn't valuable. Like if you can't exploit it, then it's like, or if you, yeah, it's a different kind of understanding. And like I try not to reward issues that are like that. But it's hard to do that without being like very black and white, and like you can't just be like, oh, this is invalid, or you can't necessarily lower the severity either, because they actually might get rewarded more, because they might have a like by lowering the severity they might have like a unique medium, and then the high is probably like duplicated by with a bunch of people who do understand the problem. So I think like again, this is also I haven't like this was new when I like added in after I stopped judging. They have like report quality. So I guess if the quality of the report, like of the report is poor, then you really don't get rewarded that much. And so I think that's a good way to align incentives and be like, you won't get like the entire reward if you don't write like a good issue. And I think people need to sort of take care and pride into what they write, because at the end of the day, it is like you can use it as a portfolio to get a job at an audit firm, or to join Spearbit or something. And it's definitely something they look at. Like they'll be looking at the types of issues you write, and the quality of your writing. It's a big factor that they consider.
Yeah, 100%. Like the overall quality of the reports, I think it's gotten better since that new rubric was introduced to mark reports as like valid or unsatisfactory, and then have it in a scale. And yeah, really useful to get into an audit firm. I pretty much just leverage the Code Arena findings to get into an audit firm. So yeah, really recommend people to write good findings and then use that as a portfolio if they want to get a job as an auditor or something like that.
For sure. And I guess like some people don't care about that. They're just kind of like looking to maximize their profit. But I think it's becoming more and more difficult to gamify Code Arena. So yeah, I think inevitably that will sort of diminish for them, and then there's nothing for them to fall back onto. So yeah, it's a definitely like you're kind of future-proofing your career by like actually just taking like pride in the work that you do. Like believe it or not, it's like you do good work, you'll stick around in this industry.
Yeah, that's a good tip. Yeah. So, are you, is Sparebit sort of like your main source of work at the moment?
Yeah, I would say so. Like I did a couple of private audits. And then I'm like, Spirit, like, obviously the pay is amazing, but they just take away like a lot of the nitty gritty stuff that I don't want to deal with when it comes to, like, doing an audit. Like, I think they kind of handle a lot of the like finding the right clients, and they find like the best. Like, you get to work with the most insane projects, and I think that's kind of the main appeal for me with working with Spearbit. And they also like when you write the issues up, they put the report together for you. So that's kind of like taken away, like you don't need to handle that sort of side of things too. And just like all the meetings and stuff, they line up, like it's super efficient, everything's kind of like optimized, it all makes sense. You don't have to write testing or anything like that. You just kind of like focus on the finding the really interesting bugs. The way you communicate with like the client and like yourself is kind of makes a lot of sense. Like you have like GitHub pull requests, and you just comment on the contract, like the specific part of code of what question you have. And so you always have a backlog of like all the questions you've had. And it's all like it all has the context of like what part of the contract it was in. And so yeah, I guess like for me it's just being really, really good to work with like other people as well, and also just have that streamlined process. So yeah, it's like for me, because I can't get anything better than that, why should I try and change things?
Yeah, I quite like the workflow at Sparebit as well. It's yeah, everything is pretty smooth.
Yeah. It's crazy because like I don't think any of the co-founders like had a traditional audit like firm background. And so it kind of just worked out the way it did, like with the like how the process was streamlined. And yeah, it's kind of like again, it's super intuitive, and so I've never really had any issues with it.
And how often do you get audits at Sparebit? Because some people have to wait quite a long time to get an audit. Is that pretty much all you do? Is that enough work for you?
Yeah, so like I think as an LSR, you get a lot more freedom. Because at the end of the day, that's the bottleneck. It's hard to find like LSRs. And so what Spearbit is trying to do is to train them up and build like that's why we run workshops, and we like I guess mentor people, and we're trying to build like a culture of like helping each other out to bring the skill level of each auditor higher up, so that we can have more LSRs, and then with more LSRs then we can actually run like more audits. And so yeah, I think being an LSR, it's good because you basically say yes to an audit and you'll get that audit. So there is kind of like never-ending work for me if I wanted to do that. But I would say like I probably work 70% of the time at Spearbit. I mean, I try and like align audits to be like 70% of my time, and then 30% I'm kind of like researching or just taking a break from things. So I think that's kind of been a good balance for me so far.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. Like a lot of the security researchers sort of say that's they have to wait quite a while to get work, and LSRs always get work. So that's a really interesting.
It's like that for now, but I think hopefully that will get better over time.
Yeah,
Yeah.
nice.
Again, this is like it comes down to the problem of like there are lots of people who are intermediate, but it's again hard to get to that other end. And yeah, I guess it's a much slower process than going from beginner to intermediate, then going from intermediate to somewhat advanced.
Right. So, in terms of yourself, what helped you the most to sort of bridge that gap from intermediate to advanced?
Yeah, I don't know. I just like I swear what all of a sudden like one day it just clicked and everything just made sense. I don't know what I did. Again, I think it like code reading was amazing at the time. I was just grinding it out. Like it was super addictive because the money was amazing and yeah, we had like some really cool work and like you just find bugs all the time. And like every time you get a medium or higher, you know, it's just a bit of a dopamine rush. And so that was like kind of my driver for a few months. And then yeah, I kind of moved on from that. So yeah, I think there's also a skill in its own of being able to go deep into a code base and like have that like deep focus. And so honestly, like and that's something I'm still working on, but if you can train yourself to, it's not necessarily the amount of time you put into a code base, it's the quality of time. So if you can train yourself to like really spend a few hours, like concentrate like fully and just like seek to understand, and then in the back of your mind, you know, you're subconsciously trying to break things apart. So I think like just kind of having that kind of laser focus and just being consistent with it, and then over time you will get to a point where you will feel advanced enough. I think it's yeah, there's no need to rush the process per se. I think grinding it out isn't necessarily the most healthy like mentality because you will burn out. Like it's just a matter of time.
Yeah, that's a good tip. Repetition of that deep focus and having that done over a period of time. Yeah, definitely. I can see how that can increase your skill a lot. How many hours do you work usually a day? I interviewed Pashoff before on the channel. He was like he was working 12 hours a day or something insane like that. He seems to sort of manage that without burning out. But yeah, how about yourself?
Well, I'm not gonna lie, like when I was doing code arena, I was probably doing yeah, like 10 to 12 hours, but I was taking lots of breaks, so I don't know how effective that, and that was also alongside Sigma Prime too. So like probably was more like 9 hours of actual focus. But honestly, I felt pretty burnt out at the end of that after a few months. So yeah, for me, like it's less about how much time I'm spending, and it's more about like how much like I can get done in like that amount of time. So I aim for like 6 to 7 hours of like solid focus. And then I might do a couple hours on the weekend just to, but it might not be like super focused. It might just be like kind of admin stuff, like replying to different issues and yeah, just kind of getting on top of things before the next week. So yeah, I'm not really like one to think that more time is better. I just think yeah, you can optimize the time that you spend and just do it more efficiently.
Do you sort of have any techniques to help you focus, like take breaks every 20 minutes or so, or is it just like block out a whole like couple of hours and you're just 100% focused?
I think the challenging part is it takes a little bit of time, like a day, actually a decent amount of time to really get like into the flow of things when you're auditing. Same with your programming too. It's like, so like the Pomodoro technique doesn't really make sense. Like it's more of a study technique. But yeah, you need like to get really deep into things. And I think it takes like, I would say like it takes 20 minutes really to get like into something. And then I would probably try and spend like an hour and a half or 2 hours before I like really start to like, yeah. I think the important thing is just like listen to your body a bit. And if you're like starting to lose focus, just take a break. There's like no reason to like push yourself past something that's gonna make you really uncomfortable. Yeah, so I don't know, just find that balance.
Interesting. I think I'm a bit low on the amount of focus hours I'm doing each day. I probably do about, 4 hours or so each day, I would say. Probably need to sort of increase that.
Yeah, I think it's, again, I feel like with auditing, it does make sense to do less time, but maybe more like more of an everyday thing. And like that might not work for most people, but yeah, like I think I know some people who work weekends, but they might only work 5 hours a day. So it kind of works pretty well with their lifestyle. But then again, like you do need time away from things where you don't do anything. And so I guess like if you don't have your weekends, you don't really have that like that proper break. But yeah, I don't know, it's tricky.
Yeah, it's that spaced repetition, spread out over a long period of time where you really sort of start to put things into your long-term memory. And I just really love how flexible this type of work is, even at a firm. Like, people say that they want to be an independent security researcher because it has a lot of flexibility, but actually auditing firms have pretty insane flexibility as well. You can swap out weekends, you can like swap out public holidays and all that kind of stuff. So really loving the flexibility and just trying to find out a way of working that fits.
Yeah, I think and that's kind of like what should be important, right? It's like as long as you get the work done, it shouldn't really like they shouldn't care about how you get the work done. And it's good, like I mean when I was at Super Prime, like you just didn't feel like you were micromanaged. And like other companies, like not necessarily audit companies in Web3 are like that, but other companies in general are very much like that. Like you just like I talk to my friends and stuff, and and then during COVID, you just see how like how they operated, where they had to constantly be online on like Microsoft Teams, and people would like check in on them, and like sometimes they would have like a software in their laptop which would kind of monitor their attention, and I was like, damn, like that's just way too much. Like surely you lose a lot of productivity and creativity by treating them like kids, Yeah, it's like, yeah, I don't know. Surprisingly, like you leave people to their own devices and they're actually interested in doing the work, they will do the work. There's no need to like hold their hand all the way through.
Yeah, 100%. I think maybe people who work in auditing sort of take for granted like the flexibility that we have compared to people working in other industries.
Yeah, I definitely forget that, like, I can just work wherever. Like, it's def like that's such a big, like that's such a nice thing to have, and yeah, it's easy to forget to be grateful about that, because not a lot of jobs give you that flexibility to work wherever in the world you want to be.
And I guess you pretty much joined this industry straight out of uni, so you didn't really have to experience any of that micromanagey type of stuff.
Yeah, not really. Like I worked at a couple of places before, like two internships, and I worked at like my university, doing like some networking stuff. And I guess like I got a little bit of a taste of like what the workplace politics would be like. And yeah, it definitely was not for me. So I'm kind of glad that I'm not involved in any of that stuff.
Yeah, nice. Oh, you're sort of like living that digital nomad life now. You can be wherever you want, sort of control your time and work on whatever you feel like working. So yeah, really, really nice luxury to have, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's definitely like, and like I mean, because of COVID and even before that, like I feel like I didn't really have the time to travel, and so now I've got the flexibility and time to travel. So it's like kind of good that my work type of work allows that. So yeah, super grateful.
Yeah, nice. So where do you travel mostly these days? Like, you are currently in New York. Do you fly around to security conferences and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I'm still like working it out. I'm trying to see if I can do like full-time digital nomad or not. So right now I'm just doing like structuring my travels around conferences. So I'm like using the conference as an excuse to go to a new place. And then doing like a couple months around the conference, just to like hang around different parts that I want to go to. So New York for me is just like I've been wanting to go to New York for some time, and there's people I know here, so it's just like, why not? It's before ETH Denver, so it kind of makes sense. Yeah, so like, I guess I'm probably like traveling like a couple months on, like 2 or 3 months on, and then I come home for about a month, and then I go off and for a few more months. It's doesn't really like make sense to do that, because, but it just feels like it's hard to commit to like leaving my like city like permanently and like not with no expectation to come back. So I'm kind of like torn in between. Like I want to travel and like see different places, but I also want to like still stay close to home and like be connected to like my city. So yeah, it's a lot of things to think about.
Well, it's good to have options, right? And it sounds like you are really
Oh
enjoying
yeah.
this kind of lifestyle.
Yeah, no, it's I mean, again, very grateful to be able to do this. So I really like can't complain. Like that's the only issue I have with it. It's just like you can be so far like across the world, and so you definitely lose touch with like things at home, and like you come back and you're like, damn, like oh, I don't know, like I miss this or I miss that. But then sometimes you come home and you're like, you know, nothing really has changed. And so yeah, it's like you can't be everywhere at once, and so you just kind of have to accept that.
Would you say there are any cons to this sort of lifestyle? Like, time management and
Oh,
working
for
out of
sure.
hotels and that kind of stuff?
It depends where you're traveling and like the kind of like lifestyle you get. I think you can make it work. Like I have a portable monitor with me. I have a keyboard. I have a mouse. Like I have a proper setup. So I don't feel like my productivity necessarily goes down. And I usually stay out of Airbnbs. So I have like kitchen that I can cook out of. Sometimes there's a gym in the apartment as well. Yeah, like, and I've got a desk as well. So it kind of like feels a bit like I'm at home. So yeah, I do think it's like you do need to plan ahead for it, like to have the right like gear for it all. But yeah, it's not impossible. I think the most challenging part is if it's like the frequency at which you move around. Like I think in Europe I was moving around like once a week, and like that was a bit too much, or like once a week or once every 2 weeks. And so I think like if I was to do this long term, it would be more of like a month in different places. I think that kind of makes the most sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like moving around every single week, you would like can't really find
Oh, it
like
was
your base,
insane.
right?
No, it was way too much. Yeah, and like you're dealing with different cultures, different languages as well. And so it was a lot to take on. And yeah, I definitely learned from that. I was just like, yeah, I can't do that again. Yeah, it was a few months of pretty intense traveling, so, but it was worth it. Still made it
Yeah.
worth.
Nice. Yeah. Well, it sounds fun. It sounds fun. And you're young, you can travel by yourself. Not too much responsibilities yet, in terms of family and that. So yeah, it's good to live this sort of life
Yeah.
when you're still young, right?
For sure, for sure.
So have you got any tips for people who want to get into this industry? Like for example, if you started your career all over again, what would you say?
Like, if depends how far back I go. If I was to be like, I'm back at university, I would probably have, I would have done a maths degree for sure. And then in terms of getting into this field, I would say, like, I guess, like, find a reason for why you're doing this. Like, if it's simply about money, I don't think that's going to be a good driver for the long run. I think, like, you do want to, like, be interested in the type of work that you do, because ultimately that would be a much bigger motivator for yourself. And yeah, just like be eager to reach out to people and to like to learn from different like people's experiences. And like I think like having the right mentor early on will go a long way in like helping you from making the same mistakes. And I guess like I don't know, you can even like if money isn't like a super big concern for you, like you can just offer to be involved in an audit for free and just like to learn and to again like it if you're like eager enough, I think most people are willing to accept you or to sort of take you on. Yeah, so if you just kind of like I don't know. Yeah. I don't feel like I feel like I don't really make too many mistakes with like working at Sigma Prime was honestly the best place I could have been working at. Coder in it was super valuable. I just like you always feel like you look back on time and you're like, oh, surely I could have done that faster. You know what I mean? Like you could have, but then it really doesn't ever work like that. So again, like being patient with yourself is also super important, just to like enjoy the process rather than like constantly trying to get to the end and like be the best of the best or whatever.
Yeah, definitely enjoying the process is a big factor to keep you going.
Yeah. It's like nothing better than finding that bug. Like,
Yeah, you get that dopamine rush, and
it's way too good.
that honestly, yeah, that's so good.
Yeah.
That really like keeps you going, I reckon.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And it's like, I'm scared because what if, like, the security of this industry, if it continues to get better and better, it's harder to find bugs, or sometimes you won't find bugs. So I wonder if, I'm sometimes worried that my motivation will start to diminish over time if I'm like not engaged enough with certain audits. Even if it's like a really, really cool project and the code is really, really good, it's like if I don't find anything, you just don't feel like you're doing your job as well as you could. But again, that's the kind of another thing you should accept.
Yeah, I was previously a penetration tester, and some engagements I was on, you just don't really find any cool bugs, and it really depends on like what type of engagements that you get put on, how interesting it is, and like in this field with auditing, I feel there's like almost a high severity bug in every code base. Like on Code Arena,
Yeah.
there's always good bugs, interesting bugs, and yeah, same with like audit firms. Every project seems to turn up something, and the bugs are like so creative and fun, and you get a huge dopamine rush for finding them. It's yeah, really fun.
Yeah. It's like for the industry, I hope the security gets better, but then I'm like, but it won't be as fun for me if that's the case. So yeah, I don't really know what where to lean on that.
I think slowly it will get harder and harder to find bugs as the industry matures, but yeah, we can have a lot of fun
Yeah.
in the meantime.
I hope so. Yeah, it might take a couple of years for that to really like happen. Well, I hope so. I don't, yeah.
Yeah, nice. I actually saw Dimitri post on the Twitter thread. He was
Oh
asking you
yeah.
where you got your fashion sense from. I actually did an audit with him just recently. It was a
Oh
really
no.
cool experience. Yeah, do you know what he's talking about? Like your last interview with the mustard colors, right?
I think that was my I did like a small workshop in Bogota at like Sozu House, and yeah, I had this like a fluffy mustard sweater on. But Dimitri's just trolling though. He doesn't. He means it, but he doesn't. He's trying to like. Yeah, he does that. He does that. Just trying to rile me up.
Yeah. That's cool. Well, it's been a pleasure chatting with you, Liam. Really nice tips. I think I got a lot from that, since I'm sort of following in your footsteps, like joining Sigma Prime and going through that path of leveling up through Autofirm and Codarena at the same time. And I actually joined Sigma Prime because I saw you and Kirk were like dominating the leaderboard last year, and then I was like, "Oh damn, where the hell did these guys come from?" And they was like, "Oh, okay, so these guys are from Sigma Prime. Okay, I guess that's what I should do as well." So yeah, I'm sure your journey has inspired a lot of people. So yeah, really appreciate you coming on and sharing your experience.
Yeah, no worries. It was really, really great to chat.